so you'll be added to that intro next week. Your booth, though, you noticed, was kind of in the background.
Awesome.
So welcome to Unleash Your Courage. This is your host, Angela Schroeder, a show where we talk all about facing our fears, making courageous decisions, and all of the stories in between. So excited to have Kurt Kempton as my guest here today. So welcome, Kurt.
Thank you, Angela. It's awesome to be with you.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I was just telling Kurt, I'm actually in his time zone. I usually get time zones correct when I'm going back and forth between Central and Eastern, but I am in Arizona with Kurt. And all of a sudden, a couple of days ago, I was like, oh my goodness, my show's at 10, not at 1.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And we don't, and just to make it even more complicated, we don't do daylight savings time. So it's a little more confusing. Yeah.
That is what makes it more confusing. So if you are watching on Facebook Live, make sure that you allow StreamYard to show us your name so we know who you are. So whether you're joining us live on Chirp Step Radio, live in the Facebook group, or listening by recording, we are glad you're here today. So as we get started, Kurt, why don't you just tell the audience a little bit about you?
All right. I think I have a sneeze coming up, by the way. So let's just get ready for that. perfect. When you're live on the radio, that's when this is going to come, right?
Exactly. Usually I say how I know you, but I'm going to go into that story.
We have quite a history. Yeah, Angela, we do.
So it's a fun story. So we're going to wait until later for that. Okay.
Well, you know what? As I'm telling you sort of some of my background, I'm going to level the playing field with you and me here. I'm going to tell you some stuff that sort of ties into that. No one will understand why until you bring it in later. But basically I am a guy who grew up in a family that was, we weren't, I think calling us poor would be unfair to like truly poor people, but like, asking for a pair of shoes was a huge burden on me to ask my parents. So to give you a little bit of background, I grew up that way. I went on a mission for my church for a couple of years in Canada. And when I got home, I decided I want to be an entrepreneur. That's the first time I'd ever thought about it. I was 21 years old, just finished serving for 2 years. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was working at a bike shop and going to college. And I thought I was going to be opening up a bike shop. And I was working two jobs when I first got home. I was working at FedEx at all night, loading airplanes. And then I worked at a bike shop all day. And then I went to school and interspersed with that. And that's when I met my wife. And it was awesome. I knew the first time I met her. I was like, this is the girl I'm going to marry. I don't want to get too sappy. No one even knows who I am at this point. But I'll just say this. When we, on our very first date, it was a blind date. Some lady who I'd mowed her lawn for free. I don't even remember the experience, but I'd mowed some lady's lawn when I was in high school for free. It left an impression on her. And when I got home from my mission, she called my mom and said, I want to set him up with my niece. And my mom, when I got home from my mission, she had a calendar filled with names of girls whom she had filled up with people I did not know. And she thought that was how she was going to welcome me home after 2 years, is to go on a new date with a new girl every night for like a month, which is not great. That is not a fun, that is not nearly as much fun as anyone can imagine. So anyway, this just happened to be a blind date I showed up to, and we were playing a game. Angela, have you ever heard of the game called Malarkey? Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of that, yes.
Have you? Okay. It's sort of like Balderdash. You're basically supposed to make up a fake thing that a word means or a phrase means or something. And I don't remember any of the words or any of the phrases. I just remember that night we were making up a word, and she looked at me in the eyes while we were like, we went off in a corner and we were like trying to like come up with a thing. And when she looked at me in the eyes, I just saw that there was like, I loved everything I saw in there. And I knew that there was no barriers, and I knew it was real. And I don't know how to explain it other than the fact that I got in my car, I drove home afterward, and I'm like, Mom, I met my wife today. And she's like, don't you dare say a word to anyone about that. You're crazy. You know, that's not, That's not good. So I was like, okay, well, I won't say anything. Anyway, she proceeded to, we dated for a while, and then she proceeded to break up with me, like, I don't know, 5 months into the relationship. But the next 2 weeks were pretty miserable because I'm like, oh no, like, I love that girl. But she was like, I don't think I'm ready to do anything. Anyway, 2 weeks later, we get back together. And like a week after that, she makes a statement. She says, you know, my sister, she's getting really serious with this guy. How funny would it be if we had a double wedding? And that was the first I'd ever heard that we were getting married. And I was like, what? Yeah, I'm down, whatever. I'll get married, whatever. You know, like, I was so excited. And she's like, oh no, that's not what I meant. And I'm like, oh! You know, I'm so pumped. So anyway, I get in the car. We were eating these nachos. You can get half price nachos at Applebee's. They're the appetizer nachos, the ones that I look forward to so much every time I go to Applebee's. You got to go after 10, but if you go after 10, you get these nachos. So we're eating these nachos, and she says that, and like, I can't even enjoy the nachos anymore. I'm so pumped. So I hurry. I take her home. I drive back home. I'm still living with my parents at the time. I run back to my parents' room, who they're dead asleep at this point. I run back to their room. I'm 21-year-old, I'll say kid, even though I guess I'm a man at that point. I'm like, mom, dad, I think I'm going to marry Rachel. And my dad, out of a dead sleep, he just pops up like it's a movie. And he gets right into my face because I'm like right down there like yelling. And he takes his finger, and my dad, just so you know, he used to be my scoutmaster when I was a kid. We called him old man sausage fingers because his hands like were like bratwursts, like fingers. Like, he was a strong, strong man. He'd never hit me, but I thought I was going to die. He pops up and he takes his finger and he puts it right. Like, I felt the wind as it came up to my nose. And he's like, you don't think anything. You either are or you're not. You're either committed or you're not. It's 100%. This is not something you're going to have friends, other girlfriends, stuff. You need to decide. Like he's like in my face. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to die. Like, all he has to do is just whip my face with that finger and it's over. Like, I was so scared. And I like jerk back. And when he's done yelling at me, my dad's never yelled at me like that ever in my life. And I'm like, Dad, what I meant to say is, I think Rachel will let me marry her. And he's like, oh, well, congratulations. Can we talk about it in the morning? And he just fell back asleep, totally out. Now, I tell you that, Angela, because that was the beginning of my entrepreneurship journey, because Rachel was a big part of that when I decided to do it. Also, it's when I learned about commitment. Like, I always knew my mom and my dad were super committed to each other, and I grew up in a house where I never worried that mom and dad were not on the same team. There's none of that. But I didn't understand where it came from. That was the first time where I had learned that my dad was not passively married. My dad was not passively in love with my mom. It was a very active and committed and deliberate thing that he had done. And I think about that, maybe not every single day, but basically every day I think about that. Because that's when I really learned what commitment was. And from that point forward, you know, the entrepreneurship journey started, and I'd say that commitment is basically what made everything else work. So.
Wow. Very good storyteller. Not everyone's a good storyteller. I was just like so lost in the details of, you know, you had every emotion and sense going into that of your dad, and, you know, what you were thinking, what you were eating, all of it around there. So what a great story. I didn't know that story of how you met your wife and how that all began. And so that's fun. And it does tie in. It does have a little tie in when you guys get to that. That is great, that commitment. The other thing I heard you say of your, you know, what your dad said to you, and I always believe this, my dad would say it to me, and I think that's why I still have such a such a strong belief in that is your dad's like, you either will or you won't. Like it's an absolute commitment. I always have said to my kids, like the word try doesn't exist. Like I'm going to try and play, or I'm going to try and win, or I'm going to try a new thing. Like you're already all out if that, not, oh, I think this is going to happen, or I want this to happen, or I'm going to try. It's either like, no, I am going to do this. Yeah. Or not. And that's a mindset just in how we speak to ourselves and our words and the decision that we've made about it. If you're either, you know, you're either all out or you're all in, not somewhere lukewarm.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, from there, I was going to say from there, so many things have happened. Do you want me to like sort of go into the entrepreneurship part?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, from that time, Rachel did not, she knew she was signing up to be married to an entrepreneur, but I don't think either one of us understood what that really meant. And so, at first I thought I was going to be starting a bike shop because I thought that in order to do what I loved, if I was going to start my own business, it would have to be centered around like a hobby. And it turns out as I worked at the bike shop, I learned that making your hobby work is not necessarily doing what you love. So working retail every holiday, every weekend, dealing with inventories and stuff. As I worked at this bicycle shop as a general manager while I was going to college for my business degree, I kind of learned that that probably wouldn't be it, but I still sort of was trying to be committed to it. Well, in the time that I finished my college degree, we had two kids. I had a daughter and a son, and my daughter, was just, you know, just learning to talk, learning the days of the week. And it was one Sunday morning I woke up and she said, "Hey, Daddy, today's Sunday." And I said, "Well, that's smart. How did you know that?" And she said, "Well, because on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you go away. And then on Sunday, you come home." And that was like a huge, huge shift. I mean, if you have a two-year, I'm guessing she would have been like in that two-year-old range at that time. I was just getting ready to graduate. I was getting ready to sign some paperwork with the SBA, Small Business Association, or administration, to get a business loan for my own bike shop, thinking that that was the commitment I needed to make. And I realized this is not the life. Like, I'm just a general manager at this point. And I realized this is a terrible idea. This is not like what I want. And so I went upstairs, had a conversation with Rachel. And within the week, I decided I was going to open a window washing company, which is a big shift. Like, what the heck are you thinking? So walked away from all the paperwork, didn't finish filling it out, didn't turn down all the approvals and all that. And what I had been listening to is a book called Millionaire Next Door and Millionaire Mind. It's I think Thomas Stanley is the name of the author. It's basically a collection of just, you know, facts and data about millionaires. And one of the things that it talks about is that millionaires often do unsexy jobs. Like junkyard owners tend to be millionaires, like the one of the most common millionaires. Firefighters actually are usually millionaires. There's a lot of the car washes. People who own car washes tend to be millionaires. It's not, most millionaires are not celebrity or like famous like people. And so the book really underscored that. And window cleaning was one of the things that was like, you know, what do people not do? What are they willing to pay? I just came up with the idea, like, how much money do you have to make six figures? And I was like, well, if you work 50 weeks a year, take 2 weeks off, and you bring home $50 an hour working 40 hours a week, that equals $100,000. And I'm like, wow, that's all I have to do is find something that people will pay me $50 an hour to do. That is so easy. So that's where window washing came. So I came to Rachel and I said, "Rachel, I know when you married me, you signed up for this, but I think this is where I want to go." And Rachel's super risk averse and all that. And I know it had been nerve wracking for her, but she looked at me and she went, "I trust you." And that was it. Like, we got two kids. I don't know anything about window washing. And my wife trusts me. I better not lose that trust. So What I did is I called up. Now you're in Arizona, so you actually may or may not know. So north of Phoenix, there's a town called Anthem. It started out as just like a community, kind of turned into a town. And it's like way out north of the rest of the Phoenix Valley. And I lived in the very southeast side. So this is like really far. So I called up a guy and I said, hey, I don't know how to wash windows. I want to start a window cleaning company. We would not be competitors, but I'd like to work for free for you as long as you'll have me. He's like, hop in your truck, come on down. So I went and worked with him for a month or something while he taught me the business. He sold me a trailer with wheelbarrow tires for like $500. It was so ghetto. I have a picture of it. So ghetto.
What a great guy to like let you do. I mean, yes, he got the labor, but to be able to, you know, to be willing to mentor you on that journey. So we're going to finish this, but we need to take our first commercial break. Okay. And then we're going to finish venturing into your beginning the window washing world. So we'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. Okay, so wheelbarrow tires, learning how to wash windows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was how we started it. And I grew that company. I worked really hard, learned a ton of stuff. And 6 years later, I sold it. We grew into about an $800,000 a year window cleaning company. We had... we won the IWCA's most professional image award for 3 years in a row. And a lot of it just had to do with sort of shifting my belief that it was about the work into it's about the commitment and what you're committed to. And for us, the slogan of Five Star Window Care, our window cleaning company, was we're a customer service company that just happens to clean windows. And that was massive for us. It helped us to really blow up a business and to sell it and to get out from underneath that while I embraced the software I had built for that company. And so that's where I'm at now. I think I sold that business now. It had been about 10 years ago. And I just basically turned the software that I was using in that company into a business that I've been doing called ResponsiBid for other cleaning companies. A software company is a lot different than a bike shop, and it's a lot different than a window cleaning company. And I really wish that I would just like get in a lane and stay there, but I have been in this lane for the last 10 years. I've learned a ton. And to be honest with you, the fear that I felt when I got married and didn't know how I was going to provide for a family, and then the fear that I felt when I started a window cleaning company and didn't know how to clean windows, and the fear that I had when I started a software company and didn't know anything about how to make software, all of those fears are really just the same exact thing. I mean, at their core, and that is saying, I don't know what this is, but I trust that God and my commitment will get me to figure this out. And I know I'm not, like, if you measure my IQ, I'm not the smartest person in the whole wide world. In fact, probably don't rank up in the upper like 20%. But I do know that I have some strengths. And one of those strengths is goes way back to that first story I told about my dad. When I put my nose to the grindstone and I'm going to do something, I will surround myself with the people. I will build a plan. Even if it's not that great of a plan, I will work that plan and I will just keep watching for which tweaks need to be happening to this particular plan. But I'm not going to keep starting up new flywheels. I'm not going to just give up on something and walk away. I'm not going to just, today I'm not feeling it. Like, it doesn't matter how the daily pressures tie into it, because I know what the big plan is. And I feel like, all those years ago when I went into my parents' bedroom and I said, I think I'm going to marry Rachel. I think that lesson has taught me to look fear right in the eyes and say, what are you committed to? What are you all in on? and do it.
Yes.
So. Anyway.
I love your analogy. It's the same fear over and over again, because that's exactly right. It was just the same fear manifesting itself again of how am I going to make it work? And the fear of like letting go of this is the letting go of the security. Like, I know I can make this work. I'm really gripping to my plan. And we have to go through that over and over to grow. You went through it in big ways of the marriage and the window washing and then the business. But as business owners, as people who are growing in life, that is one of the biggest things you always have to overcome. When you are in a new season, when you're like going to grow in a big way, I'm definitely in that season right now. Like I thought this was my plan. I thought this was it. And like letting go and trusting that God, has it worked out. And there's that balance though, I talk about too, right? As an entrepreneur and a driven person, you talked about both of them that like, I'm all in and I'm going to keep running and executing to the plan. So the balance of like letting go of gripping so tightly to your plan and being open to God's plan and trusting that he'll make it work and doing the work. Like,
yeah. And I actually think that is probably, if I was going back to the old, you know, just getting his boots on Kurt, starting an entrepreneur, that advice that you just gave, if I could ingrain that and infuse it into the DNA of that guy, I would be just fine. Like, that's all I feel like I really need to know. Now, that principle will come to life many different ways. About 2 years ago, I really sucked at my job. And frankly, some might say I still do. But 2 years ago, I was still trying to make sure that I was on top of every employee, understanding what they're doing, why they're doing it, and all that. And I was a terrible CEO. I didn't realize that my business had grown to the point where you can't be the all hats guy anymore. I never had had that lesson taught to me in a way that was like truly like you will break if you don't grow. And learning to become a leader, and like you just said, I trust in God, and God has proven time and time again that he's going to take care of me. And he has. But just like that, I have hired great employees who I have entrusted to do work, who I share my vision with, and I have to have faith in them. At a certain point, it will break you to even, like, there's a certain point where if you had a 10-minute conversation with every employee every day, you would never get to sleep. You know, like a business can grow that way. And let alone a half hour conversation, right? Like, it's just not scalable.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and so like, just like I had to have faith that now that, you know, as I'm going through this entrepreneur life, I've never had a proper job. I'm completely unemployable and I have to feed four kids now. I got four kids and a wife. And my parents aren't getting any younger. So like, I'm going to like be kind of a breadwinner here. Like, this has got to work. Just like I knew that God would take care of that. I feel like there's the other part here where it goes, I have now entrusted people and I've learned how to have hard conversations. And so I know that people will either live up to their potential. They will live up to the promises that they've made and keep their commitments. And mm-hmm. think even better about things that I like, maybe see things in a way that I couldn't, and trust that, or I'm going to be destined to basically be trying to run my business as if I'm 50 people and I can't, and I'll always be limited and bottlenecked by the thoughts that come through this brain. So I guess what I'm just saying is that just like fear was all the same thing, I feel like faith also, you start to see all the parallels in faith, and it really is the same exact thing, just in a new entity. And I'm not in any way insinuating that I would worship or anything my employees, yeah. even though I do love the heck out of them.
But different kind of.
Yeah, it's just a parallel faith.
Mm-hmm. peril of faith and letting go of that control and having faith and trust, and that it plays itself out, and that if it doesn't work, then letting go of that as well. Like, you have to let go of the control. You have to realize, as a leader, like you said, they will either reach their potential and fulfill the commitments that were in front of them, or they will not. So then it is allowing them to fail as well. I think that's just as hard as like trusting that they'll get it done. Is like, this was the commitment. This was the absolute responsibility, KPIs, things that have to be done. And if you don't meet them, it's hard to let them fail. Like,
yeah. And honestly, those first few conversations are so, like, they keep you up all night. I don't know. Well, mm-hmm. people are different. I've actually met people in my life that I really don't think struggle with this at all. And I'm in a little way jealous, but I do love my humanity. So maybe it's just is what it is. But I would, you know, be in bed just, oh, I have to let him go tomorrow. I got to let him go. My window cleaning company is a really efficient worker, but he was just cancer to the other employees. He would not go through the certification program. He would not do the things I asked him to do. We did, you know, like Jesus washed people's feet to show humility and to show like service and stuff. Well, we had this thing that we would do where we just wash the threshold of a customer's home while one employee would be inside billing and the other one would be washing the threshold. And he just wouldn't, like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, it's the symbol of what it means. Ah, it's not my symbol. I'm not doing that. It's stupid. And I had to let him go. And the thing is, I'm going to lose this guy who can make me like $400 an hour. This guy is insanely efficient, but he wasn't helping me build a business that I wanted. Imagine letting him go. That was super scary. But what's happened is over time, it's not even thick skin. I would say it's a true understanding and commitment to where you want to be, who you want your business to become. And I say who your business, because your business is an extension of who you are. So you get to this point where someone doesn't keep their KPIs. They don't do the things that they're supposed to do. They don't live up to the company values, whatever it may be. And you just have to look them in the eyes and go, I absolutely love these things about you. However, because I am so committed to this, it just doesn't look like the relationship can't work. And it's not to say that you won't be super successful at another business. It's just a value fit. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's a great way to put it and frame that conversation. Well, we have to take a second commercial break, and then we haven't even talked that much about response fit. I love this season of the Entrepreneurship for You and what you get to do, because not only do you get to be another entrepreneur, but you aren't just servicing people. People are great, but you know, your clients are entrepreneurs. So you get to help business owners and work with business owners, which is awesome, because it's getting, you know, to work with like-minded people and help other business owners be more successful like you. So we'll talk about that. And I guarantee you don't want to miss the story of how Kurt and I met. So that after the commercial break. All right. And we're back. If you are with us on Facebook, don't forget to leave a comment, ask a question. You still have a chance to drill us with some questions. Okay, so I do want you to be able to talk about response fit a little bit in case people don't know all the magic of that. But first, I have to dive into the story. Do you want to tell the story or do you want me to tell the story?
I have a feeling that mine will be more accurate. I don't know why I think that. I'm just worried about you embellishing it to be worse than
okay. It's actually okay. Because this has led to some things, which I'll say is like the power of people, the power of connections, the power of relationships. Like meeting her actually benefited me like right away, because anyway, go right ahead and I'll tell about all those things.
So sales boost, what month was this? February? Is that February?
This end of March, beginning of April.
Okay. So I go to this event. I've never been to it before, but I love Pat Clark. So I heard about it. And when I heard, I'm like, I'm bringing my wife. Like any chance I get to travel with Rachel is just, if you guys haven't figured it out yet, I am so in love with my wife. I cannot believe I got her. I can't believe she proposed to me. I did end up proposing to her. But anyway, so I'm excited to be there with Rachel. And I see the world through the eyes of a guy who is madly in love and would not be near the person I am without her. So it's important you guys understand that when I go to this conference and I got Rachel with me, a very dear friend of mine, JC Janowski. He's going by Jared now, isn't he? Is that
no,
right?
JC just had to change it to Jared to get the check mark on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I heard a rumor. Okay. So JC comes up. I'm like, JC comes up to my booth and I'm talking to him. And I had a great conversation with him. And I said, any ladies on the horizon or anything? And he's like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, well, dude, you got to get serious about this. This is important. Rachel's sitting right next to me. I'm like, bro, you're a good man, you know, and he's got kids. He's been through another previous marriage and stuff. So it's not like I'm like getting this guy sold on the idea of marriage, but at the same time, I don't know. We were just having a conversation. It wasn't that big a deal. So anyway, we had the conversation and I see him walking around with who now I know is Angela. And, they were together a lot. And if I had a brain at all, I would have like recognized, boy, every time I've seen JC, I've seen Angela. Well, but there was a herd of people moving around. Angela and JC were in this group of people that just kept flowing by my booth, or I would see them sitting at a table or whatever. So anyway, fast forward a couple nights into this conference, and they had this group that went go-kart racing, and we're go-kart racing, and it's fun. I'm having a great time. And it just struck me, where's JC? I just asked them, like, where's JC at? And someone goes, oh, he's on a hot date tonight.
Dan Plata.
What's that?
It's Dan Plata.
Oh, Dan Plata. Oh, he's on a hot date. Okay. Yes, it was Dan. So, like, Dan, where's he? He's on a hot date. Oh, wow. Hey, I just had a car. He's listening to me. You know, I'm thinking, good for him. Awesome. Marry that guy up. That guy needs to, like, get going, you know? And so I'm, like, super happy about this. Rachel wasn't near me when that particular conversation happened. So later, you know, the next morning, Rachel and I, we woke up a little late and we missed whatever breakfast was for the conference, but it didn't really matter. The booth didn't need open for a while. So we had this nice lazy breakfast at a cafe up the road from the hotel. So we go to the cafe. I walk in and I see in the corner booth, this large group of people. Again, if I'd looked very closely, I probably would have noticed that Angela was sitting next to JC in the booth, but I looked up and they were having their morning. And the first thing I thought is, don't go up and talk to them, because if you do, they're going to feel like they've already got their order and they're going to feel like this obligation to invite you to sit down. So my goal was, don't make eye contact, go sit down, let them have their thing, and don't try to intrude. So I did that. I did exactly that. And it was nice. Rachel had this nice intimate breakfast where we talked about things. But out of the corner of my eye, I see the group getting up and going to pay at the counter. This is a very weird cafe. They don't bring the bill to the seat. You can't pay with credit card. And it's like, you got to like call the President of the United States to get clearance to have your breakfast. It's the weirdest thing. So I'm sitting in the booth and they're walking out. And I see JC. I lock in on him. JC, come here, man. I call him over. I'm like, hey, dude, so I don't know. Apparently I have a voice that carries or is loud or something. I go, hey man, I heard you had a hot date last night. How did it go? And my wife, who has been observing not the whole story, but enough that any reasonable human being would have understood what was going on, my wife just looks at me and just her face falls. And I'm talking to JC and he just changes, like, I'm good, just fine. Like, not moving his lips, teeth locked. Rachel is sitting there, like, just hand in her face, like, what is going on? And I still have no clue. What I said, well, who was it with? Like, who did you go on a date with? And just, same thing, teeth totally clenched, lips not moving. And he takes his hand, he puts it right in front of his chest, and he points over, he says, that nice young lady over there. Like, that nice young lady over there. Oh, cool, man. Like, whatever. So they walk out, and Rachel's like, do you have to scream? Did you have to be screaming the whole time? And I'm like, oh, do you think they heard me? She's like, everyone in the whole restaurant heard you, especially the girl that you just went on a date with. So now I'm so embarrassed. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just go to the airport and go home. Like, we'll just leave all the booths set up there. Someone else can take it down. We're out of here. And she's like, no, you got to have courage. Unleash your courage, Kurt. She said, she didn't really say it. But so I go back into the hall. And I'm like, we're going to bump in to JC or Angela. And someone comes up and I go, hey, I think I owe you an apology, JC. He's like, it's all good. It's all good. But he's like, that was really awkward, man. That was really awkward. And then it seemed like things went okay. Angela, why don't you fill us in on your side?
Yeah, so... It just was so funny. And it really, Kurt's really the only one that felt awkward in this situation. As I'm standing, as JC is over, I'm standing in line with Dan and John. And we are just, yeah, we can hear you say that. And we're all like, just giggling. A little to the story, if I don't know that you knew. I mean, I've had this sort of crazy path into the green industry. I met Dan at last October. He came to a mastermind I did in Omaha and asked me to be on his show on Turf Sub Radio. Then I got my own show on Turf Sub Radio, and then, which I love. And then I started getting asked to speak at different conferences in the service industry. You know, I haven't been in the service industry. And so I had developed a lot of great relationships, Dan and Dave and Michael, and, you know, just more and more people. I hadn't met you yet. I hadn't met JC yet. But then JC and I were both speaking at Clipicon. So we had literally just met a few days before.
That was like right before.
Yes. So Clipicon was, yeah, just a few days before. So we had met in Vegas. Obviously, that went well. Here's me being all kinds of vulnerable on... on camera. I wasn't planning on going to Sales Boost, but I met Pat in Vegas as well. And he's like, you should come to Sales Boost. And I was having a little FOMO. I love Dan and Michael Gregory, and two of my favorite people. And so JC is like, yeah, you should come to Sales Boost. So Wednesday before the Thursday at Sales Boost, we were talking, you know, just kind of continued the conversation from Vegas. And I booked a flight to South Carolina to come to Sales Boost. So we literally had like just met, but we're in the middle of all of like our mutual friends, you know, it's like baptism by fire. Like, oh, so all of our mutual friends are like, are you two? And so it just layered in with you. And as everyone knows in the community, it's worked out quite well.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. I don't know if I should take full credit. I'm sure that you guys had something to do with it, but I do feel like, I don't know, like if you've ever seen Fiddler on the Roof, but like Matchmaker, I feel like I was the active ingredient. I didn't know. I'll admit I wasn't trying, but boy, whatever I touch turns to gold. Hey.
There you go. So you were an instrumental part, and we just love it because it's like the beginning of the story. And that really was the only weekend that was like not awkward, but people, like I said, it was a world of our mutual friends looking at us like, wait a second.
let's just call it what it is, right? And I will say, after a few years of marriage, it has gotten to the part where it's like, hey, you know what? Your breath stinks. Like, just call it what it is. Oh yeah. And Rachel will like tell me, or I'll tell her, hey, there's something in your teeth. You know, I guess we have other things other than our mouth oral hygiene, but like sometimes you just got to tell someone, hey, there's a wart on your back, or there's a like this thing. And it's like, thank you. Thank you. Now I can't take credit for knowing what I was doing at the time, but I am a big proponent of just calling it what it is. And the cool thing is all these other people are not sure if they should label it or not. By the end of that conference, you came up and you're like, thank you, Kurt. That was worked out just fine. And I'm like, oh, good.
Life has worked out just fine. As you have all, if you follow along with our story, you have seen life has worked out very well. So, and then I think only because Kurt felt so bad, like he felt like, oh my gosh, I just met this woman and this was my first impression at the airport. You're like, what could I give you? And I told you about an event I was doing and you introduced me to Rick, your hotel guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Rick and I were just talking last night, and I've been working on a few different things with him, and he's been super incredible. We're good friends. And so I'm like, thank goodness Kurt embarrassed himself, so he felt like he needed to give me a gift.
Well, I would have done it either way, but I will admit you caught me at the airport. I remember like I was afraid I was going to miss my flight because Dunkin' Donuts took like a year to make a sandwich. And, so I'm standing there waiting and you like walk by and I'm like, are we good? You're like, yeah. We had a nice conversation. And yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, I love Rick and I'm glad you guys got that worked out. Honestly, I do feel like that's sort of the theme of the show here is that like, it all works out. There's probably people listening to the show, who feel like they're sort of in the depths of it right now. And, I don't mean to say like, the first few dates of Angela and JC were in the depths of anything, but it does feel like when I was like super embarrassed and I was like, oh my gosh, what have I done? You know, very few events in your life are you going to look back on and go, man, I really would have been better off if I had just not focused and not gotten to work and not just let things be the way they needed to be and just work with what I was given. You know, the people who live their life in that victim mentality of, well, things would have been okay if some outside force hadn't acted or, you know, life would be much better if, you know, people would just start bringing money to my door for me, you know, but that's just not how it works. And I feel like that's sort of what I'm getting from like our discussion is that, you know, there are probably times that get pretty dark. And if someone is in that moment, I guess I'm just excited to tell you, like, it's going to get light again. It's on its way. The sun is about to rise, but you need to make sure that you're ready for the sunrise. Keep preparing yourself, keep doing the things that you know you need to do. And just know whether you believe in, you know, God, Jesus, or whether you believe in, you know, some other part of the universe. I'm just telling you that the sun shines on all men and women and it's coming again. It's going to get great. And it might not feel like it right now. And I recognize that. And I know it sucks sometimes, but just know that you're going to wake up again tomorrow and things are just going to keep getting better.
Kurt, I love it. That gave me chills. And that is great for the audience of like, yeah, it is coming, so be ready for it. There, we go through seasons, but that sunshine is coming and be ready. What's such a great lesson. Okay, before we sign off with the question, time went so insanely fast because like I said, you're such a great storyteller and so many lessons, but tell the audience just a little bit about ResponseBid quickly. We'll post in the notes like how people can get a hold of you, but like how you help service businesses.
Well, when I was listening to the last commercial break, Crew Control, I've never heard of them before. Sounds like that might be for the turf industry. ResponseBid does the quoting, bidding, packaging, bundling, automations, follow-up automations, and scheduling with the CRM that for the cleaning industry. So if you wash windows, you pressure wash, you're a maid service, you're a carpet cleaner, our sales funnel, sales system, we say it helps you to quote quickly, follow up flawlessly, and schedule smartly. And ResponseBid is designed to have tons of automations. It's a sales funnel you put on top of your CRM, and it's really designed to help you to close more jobs at higher average ticket prices with way less effort. It basically takes all of the stuff that I used to be too chicken to do in the sales process because I felt like maybe somehow I'd be this bad salesperson. It basically gives you a strong position of value. It shows the value proposition. It allows customers to upsell themselves. Basically, the way it's all put together is designed to help people to pick what it is they want. And what we found is that customers want typically about 30% more than you're selling. And if you put it all in front of the customer and do it in a way that really puts the the brand and the value combined in this sort of unshoppable way, the price just becomes an appendage to the value, as opposed to somebody just goes, it'll cost you $250 for this thing, or it'll cost you $10,000 for this thing. It's, if you want to have all of this kind of solution, if you want to have all of these things that work together that are curated for your specific situation, it'll merely cost you $20,000. But if you want to downsell yourself into the $15,000 option, or you want to upsell yourself into the $25,000 option, we find that a customer typically will ask for one thing, and then when given all of the curated options and value propositions, we have found that on average, people will go 30% higher than what they originally asked for.
Wow. You told me some all kinds of stuff I didn't even know. I know that, like, how it streamlines across, you know, across your organization. We match my company, Unique Genius Virtual Assistants. We match a lot of virtual assistants into admin positions in home service spaces. And whenever they're having trouble in their processes of like, well, how will they do the estimating? Like,
yeah, responsive it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, responsive it. It doesn't, they can be a virtual member and use that, and it just automates the whole thing for you.
Yeah, it scales it so that anyone knows how to answer the questions that it asks, and then it converts the answers to all of those specifications of the job that you're asking. It converts it into good, better, best pricing and bundling. So yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, like I said, we'll post all that in the information so you can check out ResponseFit, or if you have any questions for Kurt. We sign off each episode with a challenge, and I didn't tell you about this one in advance, but please.
Oh, thanks, Angela. So,
a challenge to the audience of what is one thing you, this week you need to do to get uncomfortable. So I have you answer it, I answer it, and then we open it to the guests as a challenge for the week that some people post in the Facebook group or let us know later. One thing you need to do to get uncomfortable. So I'm going to give you a second to think. Usually I go second, but I'll go first. 2 weeks ago, Ryan Lee was on the show, and I ended up doing his challenge and saying I was going to do cold plunge, and JC and I were going to do it together, but I still have yet to do that. So I promise you, viewers, it will be filmed, and I really don't want to do it, but I'm still going to do the cold plunge. So that is coming.
If it's not 86 or over, I'm not in.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but I believe in like picking all kinds of different areas in your life to get uncomfortable, and then that causes, you know, growth in other areas when you get uncomfortable in that. The other thing I'm committed to doing to get uncomfortable is we're going through some reorganization in my business. It has a lot to do with that leadership, like you said, in areas that I am like letting go of building up leaders and letting go. So I'm in that process and committed to implementing it. And so that was part of our conversation, and that's my thing I'm working on. So
I love that.
Now it's
You actually hit me on a really good week. I probably would have been super embarrassed a little while ago, but I'm ready for this one because I have recently made friends with a guy who was a Buddhist monk for 2 years. And he really got me thinking about something, about how when you eat food, that food is not you when it's outside. It's not you when it's inside. But it has a dramatic effect on you in terms of thoughts, in terms of the way that you feel, in terms of the way you look. Food is an interesting concept, right? Because it's not you, but it sort of becomes you. And he used that example to help me think about my thoughts. And he said, your thoughts aren't you. Like, they're just things that your spirit is partaking of. And it becomes you, and it grows in you, and it takes hold in you. He said, I would challenge you to 10 minutes of meditation every day. And all you need to do is you can turn on some music if you need or whatever, if it helps you focus, but you focus on your breathing and you observe, you try to move to your higher mind and observe the thoughts that you're having. And you don't judge the thoughts. You just observe what you're thinking about. And the idea is that most of our lives, our brain is trying to entertain us or keep us busy with thoughts. And so they're putting ideas in our head, and we're partaking of all the food all the time, the thought food. So I've been waking up a half hour early each morning. I've been doing 10 minutes of trying to observe my thoughts and then asking myself the question, because you'll get pulled into a thought, you go down the rabbit hole, and you got to like come back and get above the thought again. I will tell you that I've been doing this now for 2 weeks. I thought it would only last a short time, that I wouldn't be able to. I am anxious to get, I've been waking up before my alarm, so anxious for this. Super uncomfortable at the beginning because it's so much work and I'm still not that great at it. But I will tell you this, it has changed so much about the way that I am engaging with my mind. And I would encourage all of you guys, wake up 30 minutes early, spend 20 minutes of it at least being awake, getting awake and moving around. 10 minutes of just sitting quietly, observing your thoughts. And then when you're done, think about, I wonder why my brain, what am I to learn about why my brain is putting these thoughts at the front row? Is there something deeper that I want? Am I holding tightly onto things that aren't bringing me any nourishment? Think about that.
That was a good ending question too, because we talked a lot about that during the episode. Am I holding tightly onto things?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bringing yeah. nourishment. Well, wow. Okay, viewers. So your sign-off question again is, what's one thing you need to do to get uncomfortable? Post it in the group this week. Hold accountable, or borrow what Kurtz did. Meditation makes a big difference. It takes a while, like you said, to like get into the practice, because it's like you really feel the uncomfortable in your body. Like the anxiety I did when I first started it, to like try and take yourself to that level. So, well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining. You brought so much value to the audience and just to my life this week. All the little nuggets. So I can't wait to listen to the playback. And that's going to be my journaling prompt for this week. What am I hanging on to that is not bringing me nourishment? So.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Angela. It's been an absolute pleasure being in your presence. Well, thank you.
Yes, yes. I can't wait to be in your presence actually physically soon at the next event. So yeah. Thank you to the viewers, whether you are listening with us live or listening by playback. Don't forget, we are live every Wednesday at 1 Central. And subscribe, review, do all those things if you haven't already. Have an incredible week, everyone.
Bye.